Hello and welcome. This is Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. My name is Matt Barrios. I'm a husband, dad, researcher, writer, and coach, and I am exploring home life in global perspective. What do people do around the world, both experts and everyday folks, in order to create a home where they are consistently growing, meaningfully connecting with the people around them, and really set up to make their most powerful impact in the world around them? That's what I'm up to on the show, and I get to investigate that by interviewing, just having really great conversations with lots of different types of people, and today is no exception to that. I get to have a great conversation with an expert, and you know, he'll correct me and say maybe not an expert all the way, but in my opinion, an expert in things health and longevity. This is going to be a great conversation with Al Lyman. He's a speaker, coach, and author, and I'm excited to talk to you, Al, about your home. So maybe as a jumping off point for that, as a person dedicating his life towards helping people in longevity and health, how do you set up your home so that you are set up for longevity and health?
Well, Matt, thanks so much for having me on. I've been really looking forward to having this conversation. The topic of, you know, home life and how all of these things related, you know, to, you know, obviously our health, both mental, physical, spiritual. I mean, it's all interrelated and very strongly connected, obviously, to our home environment. You know, when I think about how my own home environment really fosters I don't want to use the word optimal, but let's just say the best possible environment for fostering good health, giving me and the missus the best opportunity to extend our health span, to enjoy a life free of disease and dysfunction. There's a number of factors that come in, you know, to mind immediately. And of course, I'm just kind of going by the seat of my pants here, but you know, first and foremost, I work hard to create an inspiring environment within our home. So everywhere you look here, I mean, as I look around, there's a sign here that says, be fearless. There's another one here that says, live the life you've imagined. So everywhere I go, there are sort of quotes and things which I can latch onto on a daily basis that inspire an ongoing belief in the power of my choices and in this idea that tomorrow could be better than today. It's a very hope-filled, inspiring environment, if you will. I think that's really important. Obviously, exercise and movement is critical for health and health span and longevity and just feeling good. So I know for the folks that I coach, one of the first things that we work on is creating an optimal environment for moving and exercising. Because I think if you have to rely on it, some folks have to rely on heading to the gym, but you want to be able to have a space in your home, you know, in whatever areas you have that you can utilize that really fosters, it gives you the opportunity to, in a moment's notice, jump into some movement snacks or a quick little set of this or that or the other thing. And that environment is positive. It's hopefully roomy enough for you to move freely. Hopefully you don't have to move a whole bunch of books or, you know, winter clothing off the bed, right? So you can, you know, put it somewhere else. Setting up that environment so that in a moment's notice you can get right into something, I think, is really important. And I'd say thirdly, what comes to mind is interacting with nature in a way that fosters you know, a positive outlook and a hopeful outlook, and something that, you know, just at least for me, helps me to step back and just be grateful. So, you know, having some plants, lots of oxygen, and obviously, you know, whatever space we have around our home, which is somewhat limited, is I try to make it as natural an environment as possible. And I spend virtually all my time barefooted when I'm inside and when I'm outside as well. So that helps me, I think, to connect to the earth in a way, you know, that, again, ultimately feeds a more positive outlook, because I think it, you know, at the root of everything that impacts our health and our ability to extend our health span or our lifespan, at the root of all of that is belief in the power of our choices, right? And a feeling of hopefulness about tomorrow and the next day and the day and the next day after that. Because I think when we lose that hopefulness, when we just become apathetic and just think that, you know, our choices really don't matter, then inevitably we're not going to see the outcomes we're really looking for. And you know, I know you think this too. When I'm able to experience the home environments of other people and even the people that I work with, when I see those same kinds of things, I know the opportunities that they have are going to be much greater, and the chance of them experiencing some success is going to be much greater as well too. And I hope that ambulance is not coming for you.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably hear it here in the background. Yeah.
No apologies.
Big city living, what can I say, you know? Comes with the territory. Sure. Thank you for such an interesting and robust answer to that. I love also how much you're bringing it back, even at the end there, to how you started it, which is the shift in mindset, having inspiration surrounding you, having messages that are positive, that remind you of your freedom, your choice, that are empowering, how important that is, and how interesting to literally surround yourself with quotes that tell you about that in your life, and you're immersed in it on a regular basis. And as you're going to bed, brushing your teeth, whatever it might be, you're getting a reminder of this is who you are and this is what you're capable of. And that just sounds like a very empowering environment to live in.
You know, I would add one more thing. Thanks, Matt. And this just really occurred to me, and I'm not sure why I didn't originally include it. So as you know, I wrote a book titled Age Well and Feel Great. This book really is a compilation of all the things that I've learned over the course of my entire life about how to get healthier and extend our health span. In the epilogue of the book, I ask the question, and it's one of those, I'd say the epilogue is really how I wrap the book up emotionally and try to connect with the reader. But I ask the simple question, what matters more, your hopes or your fears? And then I ask the question, what is your why? Because at the end of the day, for any of us to make the kinds of positive choices each and every day, despite the ups and downs, the challenges, busy, you know, work schedule, I mean, stress that just comes from so many different places. Our world is, as you know, is crazy at times anyways, or so it seems. But we all have to have a why, something that really inspires us to do the things that matter the most, especially to care for ourselves. And of course, really what I'm talking about are the people in our lives, right? I can tell you, as I sit here, I'm 63, I've got two children and two grandchildren, and I wanna see those grandchildren not only grow up, but I wanna see them get married and graduate from college. And I wanna see their children. I wanna give myself an opportunity to create memories with those children as well, and leave a legacy too. So my why is largely driven by those people that I care most about in my life, and of course what I'm getting to are you know, pictures that I have everywhere of my kids. I mean, this is ironically, so here's a picture of me finishing the Miwok 100K, which is right there in the Headlands, Marin Headlands, just on the other side of the Golden Gate. 62 miles in those hills. So here's me finishing, and that's my son AJ, who came out to support me during the race. So this connection with the people that we love, I mean, every one of your listeners that's tuned in right now, they can think of, you know, those people that really bring that meaning to our life. And so it goes without saying, we want those pictures around us and those reminders of what our why is. And so I use those pictures to inspire me to go, you know what, I'm going to make a better choice today. I'm going to try to care for myself and in a way reduce the chance that someday I'll be a burden to those people. Think about it, right? There's no one listening right now that would say, hey, when I get to be 70, I want to be a burden to my kids. Or, you know, when I get to be 80, right, I want my kids to have to worry about me morning, noon, and night and have to come and visit me in a convalescent home. Nobody would say that, right? Nobody would say that.
Right.
So the idea of self-care, of self-love, of self-discipline, of making better food choices, reducing stress, trying to incorporate exercise in the best ways that we can, these expressions of self-love and self-care are really as much about the other people in our lives. And these pictures, for me, I mean, they just make the connections.
That's great. I mean, to have that why in the form of real people that you love and care about, generations to come who you would love to meet, all of that. I mean, that's really incredible. And I think it takes a particular futuristic mindset that is thinking legacy in order to make some of the choices that you are helping drive people to make around longevity. How did your journey with longevity really begin? Like, what was the genesis of it? How did you first start learning about it? What did that look like for you?
Well, it's, of course, these are stories that I tell in my book, but believe it or not, when I was 25, well, in my early 20s, I should say when I was a kid, I was never athletic. I didn't play sports. I was always the last kid to get picked on the playground for kickball every time. But in my early 20s, after I had embarked on my career and had a job, I started running to try to get in shape because a lot of my colleagues were doing it too. And it was really hard, but I kept at it. As you know, after a few years, I began, for whatever reason, to notice how my grandparents and my parents as well, as and also their friends, how they were aging and how there seemed to be a lot of ill health around me. Both my parents at the time were smokers. And so I started to think about my own running, not just as a path to improve my fitness or to get leaner, but also as a way to improve my health. And then one day when I was 25, I was walking from where I worked to an adjacent, a gym that was close by with a friend, and he asked me why I ran, and I thought about it for a moment, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I said, I run to square the curve. And at the time, he had no idea what that meant, and what it really was this idea, this vision that I had of living my entire life in good health with no disease or dysfunction, and then one day going to sleep and not waking up the next, right? And that juxtaposed that against the slow, gradual decline of health that we often see around us, right? Sort of a stair-step, gradual decline. So this vision I had, I just said it was square the curve. So I made a conscious decision at 25 to die healthy. That's the phrase that I used at the time, which most people hear now, it doesn't, you know, make sense to a lot of people at first, but it's chapter one of my book, What Does It Mean to Die Healthy? And that simply means that, you know, despite the mystery that exists in our health and the things that happen to us and all of this that we can't predict, is this idea that the science shows us it's our lifestyle choices and our mindset and, you know, the mission and purpose that we have when we get up every day and the food we eat and the exercise we get and all of these other factors that really determine at least our ability to give ourselves the best chance to live a full, healthy life. It really, at the time, it wasn't so much about, hey, I want to live to 120, but it was really about I didn't want to spend the last 10 years of my life in a convalescent home. I mean, I remember vividly my grandfather passing away, I think at 72, and having spent literally the last 5 years of his life in a convalescent home, nothing but skin and bones. My dad, who I have really... I mean, he's a subject of the, you know, many of the chapters throughout the book, but I, of course, I tell the story of him passing now. He's been gone almost 22 years. So my dad There's a picture in the preface of the book of my dad when he's 59 and he literally looks like he's 80 years old. It's very sad. But he passed he passed 1 year older than I am right now from brain cancer. So these are things that I saw around me, and we all see this right now. We all see a lot of ill health and people suffering. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, I was a weird kid, I guess, you know, just thinking a little differently, because I was looking ahead and I was like, this is not what I want for my life. I want something better. So what do I need to do to manifest this? And really, I've been thinking about it every single day since then.
Wow. I think it's interesting how often, sometimes it's almost the cautionary tales that we note through life that help
us,
you know, go swing off on a different trajectory. And in that case, it sounds like, you were noticing, seeing folks age, and it led to massive deterioration in health, that downward slope, as you described, and what an interesting vision to die healthy. Some people, I imagine, when you tell them about that, they're like, that's a little morbid, Al. But at the same time, it seems like it's actually a rather inspiring vision if you can get over some of the stuff that we so often need to get past, which is like a fear of death.
But I think there's all of these phases.
You are helping people face it. Right?
There's all of these phases that we all go through when we think about the aging journey. And nobody really wants to talk about dying, but of course we're all going to at some point, right?
Yeah.
And I think part of my challenge, certainly as I've reached my 50s and 60s, and as I sat down to write the book, was really to start to embrace this idea that in order for us to really age well and age in a healthy way and enjoy life to its fullest, we have to learn how to embrace the different chapters in our life, the different phases of our life. And so that caused me to do a lot of research. There's two chapters in the book on age beliefs and age stereotypes and ageism and rewriting this narrative in our head, because I really dislike the phrase anti-aging. To me, it sort of fortifies this glorification of youthfulness, which is, of course, embedded into our society. But to me, that's not a healthy way to think about it. So I know, as I sit here at 63, I'm never going to run as fast as I did at 30. And there'll be some challenges that I'll have now, including, you know, maybe losing my hair and other changes that happen, sagging skin, right? But the reality is that there are also aspects of being this age that are beautiful, and there are opportunities that, you know, that are there for me at this stage of my life, and other people at whatever stages of life that they're at. And I think the key is embracing those rather than trying to be somewhere else other than where we are, and just trying to take control of the things that we can, and letting the rest go. Yeah. It's easy to say, hard to do sometimes, but I think that's my goal.
Gosh, I feel like you are just spreading wisdom with what you're saying, because it is a perspective shift, what you're describing, which is a little bit of a relinquishing of control in the things that we can't control and leaning into the things that we can influence and doing what we can there, right? And I think it's really important to walk that interesting balance between those things. I just appreciate that perspective so very much.
You know, in chapter 4 of my book, you just reminded me of something that I talk about often. I love Mark Manson. I don't know if you're familiar with his books. He's a great, what I think of as a modern day philosopher. And I reference him quite a bit in my book. I would definitely recommend you check his stuff out. But one of the things that Mark has written eloquently about in some of his blog posts is, and it's what I talk about in chapter 4, is that for every one of us, we're every day trying to strike this balance between self-acceptance and self-improvement, right? And if we try, if we go in one direction or another, we end up becoming a not very fun for a person to be around, and struggling a lot, right? Regardless of what it is. I love the way Mark describes either one of those personality characteristics. So as I sit here right now, you know, what I really wanted to share in the book and my message to anybody that, you know, is willing to hear it is that we're just trying to be better than we were yesterday. And it's never about perfection. And it's just this mm-hmm. idea that maybe, you know, I think of self-discipline as the most sincere form of self-love. So this idea that self-discipline isn't about, you know, berating ourselves or trying to force ourselves right. to do something that we may not want to do, but rather just expressing more love for ourselves and acceptance of who we are. I literally say in the book, you are perfect as you are. And then, of course, I follow that up by saying, you might think that's weird coming from somebody who's written a 680-page book on how to become healthier. But I was inspired, that whole section of the book was really inspired when I started following this woman on social media who had experienced a lot of changes in her body after giving birth. And many mm-hmm. of these changes were changes she didn't like, to the shape of her body and so forth and so on. And any of the women listening can very much relate to this, I'm sure, if they've had children. But this woman was really frustrated with societal's view of what a perfect woman's body is versus her struggling to accept herself and, you know, the imperfections that might have existed, at least in society's eyes, in her shape and in, you know, the what had happened to her skin. I think she had experienced a cesarean, so there were challenges with some scarring. Mm-hmm. So what she decided to do was she put herself right out there, you know, just the way she was, and she shared photos of quote unquote in imperfections. And I just loved her transparency. In my book, I tried to be as transparent about myself as well too, and just kind of put all of those things out there. So I think if we can start from this idea that we are perfect and really work to embrace self-love and self-acceptance, then we create the opportunity to then say, but hey, can I be better tomorrow? And can I do whatever's possible within me to make the best choices to manifest a better tomorrow, whether it be my health or my relationships or, you know, my mission or purpose in life, whatever that may be. And so there is this, you know, this intricate and delicate balance between self-acceptance and self-improvement. And we're all dealing with it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, to bring it to home too, I mean, a lot of this is so personal and it hits home. It hits the home within our body, the home within our minds, the physical living places that we lay our head down at night, right? Like, this is the stuff that is always ever present with us. And I do want to explore this a little bit more because I know as a person with expertise and investment in longevity, health, fitness, all of this throughout your life, I think my experience with folks who are really, really invested in health, they have routine and rhythm that they live their life in. What does that look like for you as a person pursuing longevity? What are the rhythms, routines, and I would, both outside of your house, but especially those in your house, I'm very interested in hearing.
Well, I mean, it's a fascinating topic because I think, you know, you would agree human beings are very habitual creatures. And you would probably also agree, I mean, I believe that resistance to change is the most powerful force in the universe, more powerful than gravity, right? So we have these habits that we inevitably get locked into, and then the resistance to changing those habits, regardless of whether they foster growth and self-improvement and they make us happier and more satisfied or fulfilled or not, the resistance to that change is so powerful. So all of that being said, you know, I start my day by, and I tell everybody that, you know, that's listening, get outdoors, expose yourself to morning sunlight, get in rhythm with your own circadian rhythms, and get that day started in that way. And I'll go outdoors and I'll start moving and I'll go through what I refer to as controlled articular rotations, which really means moving my joints through its outermost range of motion. So I'll move my neck and my spine and my shoulders and my hips through that outermost range of motion. And that really reflects this idea that if I don't use it, I'm gonna lose it. So every day I kind of explore those outer ranges of motion. And then
that's great, because just to jump on that point, I remember having a long conversation with a friend of mine who does the same thing, and his reasoning is probably exactly what your reasoning is, which is that mobility is one of the things most lost with age, and therefore to invest in full mobility of your joints is really important to do for the sake of longevity.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I in my book I tell the story of tissue turnover, and then. You know, which is a concept that many people are not aware of. So, of course, all the cells in our body, and there's about 3 trillion or so, they routinely turn over or evolve and change. Different cells, depending on cell type, we have about 200 different cell types in our body, so different cell types turn over at different rates. But one of the things that we know is that one thing that determines how a cell turns over is prior demand placed on the cell. So for example, if a cell inside a joint capsule is turning over, or tissues turning over, a collection of cells, if that joint hasn't explored some particular range of motion and that demand hasn't been placed on that cell, then the odds are, as those cells turn over, that capacity to move through that range of motion will go away. So I basically say, wow. Imagine you have, because we all know newborns have limitless amounts of mobility, right? Imagine if we took a child a little bit older than a newborn, let's say a 3-year-old, and we had that 3-year-old do a full split. You know, just get down and get into a position that, you know, we typically see with gymnasts. And then we said to that 3-year-old, every single day of your life, just do the split one time. Just one time. And then we imagined that 3-year-old on their, let's say, 100th birthday, and their families all around them, and then they get down on the floor and they do the split. And of course, their family, you know, their friends think, you know, it's like a circus trick. They're like the most incredible athlete. And the reality is all that person did was continue to place that demand on that tissue. So in simple terms, Matt, it's use it or lose it, right? Because our bodies are extremely efficient and economical. If a tissue doesn't need to have a capacity or competency, If that demand hasn't been placed on it, then that capacity is going away, because, you know, I guess one way to think of it is it's just about evolution, and it's just about the idea that the human being as an organism has to be really smart about where it's placing its resources. So yeah.
It makes sense. Is it the use it or lose it on a cellular level if we don't keep mobile, if we don't, keep investing in muscle tissue and so on, like it will be lost. Yeah.
In every respect, I mean, and I think we know this, you know, across, you know, a variety of different, ideas or topics, we can see it over and over again. The amazing thing, I think, for me, having, you know, worked in clinic for a long time and doing a variety of other coaching different environments where I've been coaching, is even when there's been some capacity that's been lost, the human body has an amazing ability to heal and we can regain some of these lost abilities, provided we're approaching it in a consistent way and we don't give up, you know, because sometimes it's a long battle to get back some of the, for example, range of motion in a joint that we might have otherwise, you know, lost to some degree over time. But you know, the body can do amazing things.
That's great. Okay, this is an awesome conversation. So to bring it back, we're talking about kind of rhythms, routines of life. And first, you know, step one for you, get outside, get some sunshine, feel the fresh morning sun on your face. And then this mobility and extremities of your joint movement, exercise and stretching and so on. What's next? What are some of the other routines or habits that you have formed around your home and health?
Well, you know, I'll bring it in a way back. Well, I'll say first, of course, that as a business person, you know, author, speaker, coach, I've got, you know, a host of responsibilities and work I've got to do at my computer. So I'm usually getting to work. But throughout the course of the day, I'm filling in moments in time with what I think of as movement or exercise snacks. So moving frequently is critical. You know, it's interesting, in this day and age, it's often been said that sitting is the new smoking, right? That too many people sit. But I've also seen people who got themselves a stand-up desk who ended up with more muscular skeletal issues from standing at their desk all day, right? So I think the answer is regular movement. It's just getting up frequently and getting the blood flowing. Now I'll say one other thing, because it relates to this new coaching program I just sort of launched. It's called Beat Aging Transformation, with the word BEAT being an acronym for belief, encouragement, accountability, and taking action. So there's five pillars to this coaching program, and it relates to what you asked me, which is why I brought it up. The last two pillars of this program, the first is belief or mindset, the second is movement, the third is food, but the last two are rejuvenation and reflection. And it's interesting, when we look at the latest in cutting-edge science as it relates to longevity, lifespan, health span, one of the things that we notice is that part of the process that occurs at the cellular level as we age is our bodies increasing inability to heal or repair. And part of that, it also mirrors an acceleration in some of the processes that are happening at the cellular level. The point there is that rejuvenation, to me, and then reflection, and I'll speak in a moment about with what I mean about that, but rejuvenation, this idea that for every minute or two that we spend doing a HIIT class or deadlifting or trying to get as many pull-ups as we can on the bar or during doing Turkish get-ups or any of the exercises that we might do or going out and run or riding a bike, that we should probably spend as much time in rejuvenation, right? Which is physical and mental, right? So enhancing that recovery process and sort of, you know, jump-starting those things that happen at the cellular level as well as holistically that help us to repair and recover. And that can take a lot of different forms. It could take, you know, the form of a little bit of meditation. It could take some form, you know, just a light, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of stretching. It could take the form of, you know, a relaxed walk in the evening. And then the other piece is that reflection piece. And I know in this coaching program, what I'm asking the people that I'm working in this program to do is to journal every day and to literally write down and verbalize, at least in writing or certainly in their own minds, the things that have gone well that day. I have this thing that I love to share called One Day, One Win. So every single day that goes by that you journal at least one thing that you did that day that was positive for yourself, right? Whatever it may be, making a smarter food choice, getting 5 minutes of exercise. But literally journaling that so that you can, you know, have some record. There's something about writing, right, that changes how we connect with the thoughts that we have and also on our ability to reflect. And part of that is gratitude, you know, it's an attitude of gratitude and really recognize the things that, you know, in our life that we need to be grateful for. So these are the things that are really part of my own routine to me are as much, you know, as, you know, the stuff that involves the intense physical exercise. I mean, I've done, you know, dozens of marathons, 9 Ironman triathlons. I mean, I've done a lot of extreme endurance events, but yet at the same time, I know at this stage of my life, for me to be fully healthy, I need to connect those other pieces as well too. But I think what's important, and I'll just finish with this, is whatever, whoever the individual person is, they could come up with their own ideas about what it means to them to be able to rejuvenate and reflect. For example, let's say someone loves to cook. Maybe spending some time, you know, preparing a meal might be the ideal way for them to be able to express those things. So just like diet and exercise and all of these other things, it's really about us individually finding our own sweet spot, right? Finding the things that really resonate with us on a personal level that fit our own psyche and our own personality, and then embracing those, not trying to be what someone else wants us to be or doing it in a way that someone else wants us to do it necessarily.
Wow, that sounds very, very helpful. And I think the often overlooked thing in a really holistic take on health, and that one that includes fitness and wealth and health and nutrition and everything, but also goes beyond it, is that reflection piece. I think that often is skipped, and that's so important for keeping our minds straight and keeping us focused on our true values and everything like that, remaining grateful and keeping our attitudes positive as we keep going. Yeah. So that's a very great insight. You know, this has been a wonderful conversation with you, Al, and we're finishing up this conversation. Yeah. One question I want to ask you, though, too, because I feel like you have already given folks listening and myself just so much to consider. If you were to give just like one suggestion, piece of advice for a shift people could make in their homes that will really help them with their health and longevity, what piece of advice would you offer?
Well, you know what? Living in a home in Florida where there's a high level of humidity in the air, the first thing I'd say to anybody that lives around me is get someone to come into your home and clean the duct system and make sure there's no mold growing in those systems. Interesting, right? Yeah. I mean, our environment, in the book I talk about it as the dangers of modern life, but whether it's exposure to microplastics, you know, and all of the other things that are in our home environment that are, you know, manufactured and produced to last a really, really long time with a, you know, made from a whole host of different chemicals. Again, the idea that it makes our life perhaps more convenient, but in the long term may be causing some ill health. So it would start with mold, and it would start with and it would continue on to just looking at all of the things that we're exposing ourselves to on a daily basis. The you know, the soap we use, the shampoo and conditioners we use, and again, the foods that we expose ourselves to, anything that's packaged or prepared in plastic, drinking out of plastic containers, those kinds of things. It's interesting. You know, the styrofoam cups that are typically given at a lot of the coffee shops are loaded with microplastics that often can infiltrate the liquid. And it's really about dose, right? So I'm not trying to be a fear monger here by any stretch of the imagination,
sure.
But I think if there's something simple that we can do with regard to all of those things, just to make the best choices that we can to eliminate anything that might even be remotely problematic, that would I think be a really positive step. And it's little things, like you do a little something today, a little something next week, a little something yeah. next week, and then maybe in a year
right.
You're looking at an environment that, you know, from a holistic perspective really supports good health and makes you happier as a result.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And certainly not the answer I was expecting from you on that one, Al, because when I'm thinking about health, I'm not thinking about microplastics and mold and all of that. But I think it's so spot on that that will be stuff that definitely affects our health. So thank you for bringing awareness to that so that, you know, folks like myself or others listening can have a mind towards what are the micro chemicals, fibers, and so on that could be affecting our environment and therefore our physical systems. Get the ducts clean, stay away from styrofoam, all of that. That's really, really helpful. So, Al, what are you working on these days, and how could people get in touch with you?
Well, of course, my book is available on Amazon. It's called Age Well and Feel Great, The Proven Path to Solving the Aging Puzzle and Going the Distance. And I mentioned earlier this newest coaching program, which I'm super excited about, called the Beat Aging Transformation. The reality is that we can't beat aging, right? We're all going to age. But my hope is to share what I've learned through the book and through, you know, coaching calls and all kinds of other supportive and encouraging type interactions that I can help people really take control of their life. Because, Matt, there's one thing that you and I will agree on, perhaps among many things, and that is, if you don't have your health, then nothing else matters nearly as much in life. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money you have. We know Steve Jobs died with $7 billion in the bank at age 56 from pancreatic cancer. He's often remembered as saying that he could pay someone to do everything for him, but he couldn't pay somebody to be sick for him. You know, so it really does start with good health. And so that coaching program is going on. I also have a website, Pursuit Athletic Performance. And on that website, I have six different online courses that are all movement and exercise based, because my background really is in exercise and fitness. I operated a gait analysis lab for about 10 years along with a sports physician. So I was literally every day working with injured athletes and other folks who simply, you know, needed to recover from some kind of chronic overuse injury or wanted to become faster and just improve their fitness. So those courses are about basic and fundamental, you know, skills, core stability and body weight strength training and other kinds of, you know, simple, easy to follow along courses in the comfort of your own home. That's really what I got going on, other than, you know, grinding away every day like virtually every other small business person, just to try to make a difference in the world, right? And by the way, you're doing it with this podcast. I think this is a really interesting topic of looking at, you know, you certainly caused me to think more about home environment, both internal and external, and of course how these things, you know, really do resonate and make a huge difference over the long term.
Well, I appreciate you saying so, and I appreciate the work that you're doing to help people really step into more when it comes to their health and longevity. That sounds really great. And if folks are interested in following up with you more, I will make sure to gather everything that Al just said, and I'll put it as links in the companion blog post that you can find in the show notes for this episode. So I hope that you do check that out if it strikes your fancy, and stay in touch with what Al is up to. So thank you very much, Al, for
thank
an
you,
awesome
Matt.
Interview. I really appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. Please take a moment to rate it, like it, and subscribe wherever you have listened or watched. If you really loved it, check the link in the show notes to become a premium subscriber to support the ongoing work of this project and to unlock some exclusive premium episodes. Home Life for Extraordinary Impact is a project of Home Life Design Lab. Find out more at homelifedesignlab.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter and follow along on Instagram and TikTok. Thanks.